good, though.
And that's how we're going to start the podcast. Thank you, brother. all right, here we go. Jerry Marietta, take one. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Modern Cyber Project podcast. Today we have one of my very, very good brothers, man, Jared Marietta. He's out there in California behind enemy lines doing the good work. So, bro, tell them about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, my name is Jared. I'm one of the owners of Raven Wing Limited. We're a training company out here in Southern California. Starting to spread our wings a little bit. We did a class in Colorado last year. We're headed back. You helped us get into TTPOA. And so we're headed back there this year to hopefully do 2 days of pistol performance, which is going to be pretty amazing. But I first picked up a handgun in 2018. So my brother-in-law was murdered. And my wife and I had some long conversations about what are we doing to protect ourselves? Like, what are the steps we're taking, you know, around defense of our life, our kids, our family, all the things we worked so hard for. And so we started down that journey as total noobs, right? Had no really idea what we were doing. My exposure to firearms before that had been my grandfather was a game warden. After, like, in the latter part of his years. And so he was a hunter, and I'd been exposed to that, but nothing like performance with a gun or, and never really with a handgun. So we bought funny story. We went in and got Glocks, right? Because in California, you're limited on choices because of the stupid handgun roster, right? So we went in and we got Gen 3 Glocks. I got a 17, and she wanted a 26 because it was concealable, right? Well, we figured out, it took a little while to figure out, you had to put an extension on the base pad to turn that thing into a real gun. Right?
Yep.
Terrible to shoot when we first started. But she and I started taking classes together not long after we bought them. The guy who was managing the store, he's over at Terran Tactical now. You know him, Micah Harris, mm-hmm. Tactical California, yep. If you want to find him online. So Micah started his own training company. We took a couple classes with him. And then somebody gifted us, I think we took two classes with him. Somebody gifted us the memberships to Front Sight out in Nevada, the defunct Front Sight, which is no longer around, right? And so we went out and did a couple classes there. And both times they had the designation. I forget what it's like, distinguished graduate or something like that. Basically, it was like you could shoot the paper with a relative level of accuracy and speed. And I remember thinking, how the hell am I a distinguished graduate when I've only had 2-3 classes under my belt and am brand new to this? So it left me hungry. There has to be more, right? So happen chance had it. I decided to put a red dot on my gun after speaking with some Micah and a few of the other guys around. And I had the dot on my gun for about 4 weeks. And I get a call from Micah and he says, hey, JJ Rikaza's in town and there's an opening in his class. You want to go? And so I would equate it to mainlining heroin. You walk in and you just get exposed to JJ and his skill level. And that's where I met the Raven Wing guys and absolutely just opened my eyes to what's possible. And just, I was hooked, just absolutely hooked. So I started training with them and started looking into USPSA. And it was probably 4 months after that was the first time I met you. So it was an opening in your class, got a call from the Raven Wing guys, and they were like, hey, we got an opening for the Modern Samurai class. And Micah had taken your class and came home raving about you. And they're like, bro, life-changing. You got to come do it. So signed up and took your class. And it has been pedal to the metal, really, ever since. So I'll be brief with it. We can go wherever you want to. So that would have been 2019 when we were taking those classes. I met you the beginning of 2020 and started shooting USPSA the end December of 2020 was my first USPSA match.
The December of 2020. So 3 years from now, from then until now.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm gonna get to the punchline here. You made Grandmaster and Carry Optics when?
September of this year. Okay. So just shy of 3 years.
Yeah. So I want to want to clarify for my audience out there, right? Because, you know, I have a lot of self-defense tactical people that don't compete, right? So I want to clarify what being a grandmaster means, right? So when I say I'm a master, when I made master class, I think in 2017 or 2018 or something like that, what that basically means is that we have classifiers, right? Which is generally the way that most people go up in classification, right? There are 100 or so out there that they usually set up one, or you go to classifier and master a whole bunch of them, right? Basically, once you get going, right, you take your last eight, drop the bottom two, and average the other six. Whatever that average comes out to is generally your classification. So a master class is technically, of the people that shot those classifiers, I was 85% of technically the best that ever shot those classifiers, right? Or best in the world, or however you want to say it. A grandmaster is 95%+, right? That is the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of the 1% in the world of people that shoot guns. And Jared did it in less than 3 years. So how the fuck did you do that?
That's a great question.
Especially being behind enemy lines, right? Where you don't have a range, you know, in every single town. You don't have the availability of different types of guns and ammo and the overall just acceptance of shooting sports out there. So
yeah. So I'll credit it to two things. There's all kinds of factors, but there's probably two key driving things. The first one is dry fire. I've spent a lot of time in dry fire, right? So you're spot on. I think we did this on our podcast, the Raven Wing Limited podcast. I think there's seven public ranges that you can get into across the greater Los Angeles area. And of those seven ranges, there's only three that we're aware of that you can rent a private bay that has the ability to set up any kind of a stage or mimic a stage where you're not just shooting in a flat line downrange. So for me, it was just a ton of dry fire. And then the second piece was, and I think this is a real blessing for me, because of my early exposure to instructors like you, JJ, and hooking up with the Raven Wing crew, I didn't have a ton of bad habits that I had to defeat. And I had a lot of great people to push me and not let me be comfortable ever in the development of my skill set, right? I remember the first time I hit a sub-second draw, it was like, awesome, that was slow as shit. Like, let's go. You're capable of more, right? Let's go. And you know who I'm talking about, my partner Mo, man. The greatest compliment Mo gives you is, cool, do it again, right? And so that's what I love about Mo and the constant push. So it was those two things. It started with me with really, you and I've talked a lot about this before, mastering fundamentals. If it doesn't matter how fast you get the gun out, if your grip is horseshit or your structure, your foundations are horseshit, you're not going to do anything impressive with it, right? So it was really the fundamentals. How do I build a consistency in what I'm doing and my ability to make this gun perform the way I want it to over and over and over again? And the way that I did that was through dry fire. In 2021, I joined Raven Wing. So I shot all of 2021. I was in B class. I classed up as a B class. So back to Scott's classification. That's like, what is it, 65 to 75% or 65?
It's 60 to 74.99.
So it's the widest of all the classes. People call it the B class hell because it's hard to get out of, right? And I took actually I was with Raven Wing and you were there. We were hosting you, and I think your comment to me was, quit fucking around in B class. And I took that to heart because, right, I think the greatest coaches in the world see more capability in you than you see in yourself. I played college sports, and I would tell you those are the coaches that I responded to the best. Not the ones that told me I was great, but the ones that said, there's more in that tank and I want it. So go find a way to get it for me. And that's how I felt like yours and my relationship has always been. So I was stuck in B class for a little bit longer than I wanted to be. I made A class at about a year, and that was more just by getting out and starting to learn stage planning and some of those pieces where you can just shave off some of those times. And then I got really serious about where my deficiencies were and how to train them in dry fire. So movement was a big one. And in total transparency, a lot of USPSA these days is movement, including the newer series of classifiers, is your ability to get efficiently in and out of positions while shooting, right? There's still some really good stand and deliver classifiers, which I think really test your fundamentals. But you can hack some of those if you can get good at movement, because you can shave so much time off that your accuracy percentage, you can afford a couple of Charlies and still hit MNGM scores if you're fast enough. And so for me, it was doing those pieces in dry fire and then surrounding myself with great people. So we had you, I had exposure to Tim Herron. I had exposure to, you know, one of your good friends and a great instructor, AJ Zito, who's also an M class shooter in single stack and now an M class shooter in limited optics. We've just had been fortunate through my, you know, partnership with Ravenwing to have a lot of really good folks come through. And man, I just tried to absorb. So I'm a copious note taker. This is where I nerd out, right? I figured out that in the iPhone, when taking notes during a class, you can take photos and videos and save them underneath the note you just wrote. And so I started doing that probably 2 years ago, 3 years. Yeah, 2 years ago, at your class, at Tim's class. And so in my dry fire, I could go back and reference what was the specific technique or principle that I needed to understand, what was the example that was given to us, and how do I start to replicate that in my training? And then I would say, once I got through sort of the fundamentals were there, right? I build a consistent grip. I'm comfortable that I know when it's wrong and how to fix it and fix it quickly, or pieces like that. I really started to play with things like efficiencies in transitions and what my vision's doing. And then how do I start to refine those corners? Because the difference between M and GM is often tenths of a second, or mm-hmm. one alpha versus, you know, one Charlie. And so to make that jump, it was, how do I start to refine those pieces? So vision was a huge one, making sure that I could build and manage a grip and start to control my grip throughout the course of a stage or a string of fire to produce the desired results that I wanted. And then two, understanding my body and how my body moves. So you and I talked about this when we were up in Richmond, when you had me come out in AI for you.
Yep.
And I don't think you remembered telling me, but one night after a class here in SoCal, we were back at Mo's house getting ready to do a podcast, smoking a couple stogies, and we were talking about moving through stages. And you asked me how I move right to left. And so I showed you, and you were like, why don't you just throw your elbow and start your body mechanics that way? And it was such a great reminder. Well, one, it was a great tip. And it's funny to watch JJ and these other guys teach the same things. But it's really just body mechanics, right? They might explain it like, I learned this on the range, and you, it's from mm-hmm. your background, but you implored me to go back and say, man, you played college sports, right? How did your body move? What did you do to create leverage? What did you do to create efficiencies? And why aren't you applying those same things here? And so that became a big part of my dry fire training as well.
Yeah. It's always funny. You always remind me of things I used to tell you when I was heavily in competition that I'd forgotten about. And now me going through my own journey of learning how to move again, since, you know, I got that other knee replaced and stuff, I've dropped 50 pounds, yada, yada. I'm going to get back to the competition, you know, about me asking you questions and then you reminding me what I told you 4 years ago.
Bro, you're looking nasty though, man. Getting quick on the feet. It's been really fun to watch you start to re-explore, man. It's a joy.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. You know, it's I'm letting the hate roll through me and stuff, and we're going to get back after it. Limited optics, new steel frame is the bomb diggity.
Are you loving it?
Oh yeah, bro.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It looks great.
Especially now I just did the video where I got the lock grips, right? Cause even though I love my Walter and stuff like that, the little bulge on the back doesn't do anything for me because the way I hold my grip, the new thin grip on the back where it's almost straight up and down, like your Berettas and your, you know, and the 2011s, dude, and just dry firing. It's just straight there, man. Yep. I fucking love it, dude.
I've been fighting it forever. I love lock grips, and I've been playing with all their different variations on the Beretta, which honestly is, so I am sponsored by Langdon Tactical, and I'll tell that story in a second. I'm sponsored by Langdon Tactical, so I started shooting their Berettas when I was in A class. I made M class with it and then GM with it. In fact, it's this one right here. I think we counted, I've got over 80,000 rounds on this gun now in the last 2.5 years, just a ton. But I started playing with their aluminum frames. And I don't know if you guys can see that checkering, man. It's like you put that and a little bit of the grip sauce on there and it's a
vice. Doesn't move.
It just doesn't move. So I'm really obsessed with these aluminum grips right now. I wish they made them a little bit more with the palm swell. I got those giant offensive lineman hands. But because it doesn't move, it doesn't matter that much, right? It sort of lets you grab whatever. But I'll say that to just talk a little bit about Langdon real quick. So, like I said, I started with Glocks. And so I started shooting my 17 in competition. I ended up buying a 34. And this is USPSA and some of their funny rules. Because it was a Gen 3 Glock, even though Glock makes those like beaver tail backstraps that you can put on, they started shipping them with Gen 4s and Gen 5s and not Gen 3s. So I couldn't put the beaver tail backstrap on my Gen 3 and run it legally for carry optics at major matches. So I was at a major match down in the San Diego area. I'm shooting. I felt a little pinch in my firing hand. You know, I mean, the adrenaline's going, you're shooting stage. I holster and I look down and there's blood pouring out of my hand across the top of my gun and dripping on my shoe. And I had dug a ditch because of the slide bite, because my grip is so high up on the gun. And I remember going back to, at the time, my partner Mo, and I was like, this sucks, man. I got to figure this out, right? And so I think I had the option of getting my hands on a SIG, and I had shot one in competition and had some challenges with it. Plus it's a hand grenade, right? So I was like, I'm not sure this is the route for me. Mo hands me his Langdon Beretta, which I think he might've been one of the first 100 that got his RDO cut on the slide, right? When
Langdon
did that. And I shot that thing and was instantly in love, and I have not looked back. So I ended up getting my own Langdon and shooting it, and through a very organic relationship, just posting my matches, what I'm doing, the progress I'm making with it, how I'm exploring the gun itself. Reached out to Ernest and Amy beginning of this year. I talked to them a little bit in 22, but the beginning of this year. And in February of this year, they picked me up as a part of their team. And I got a chance to shoot the IDPA World Championship with the other two Langdon shooters this year and go represent the brand, show off some of their guns. It's been pretty amazing. And I'm proud to say, because we're here in California, we have limited options. Getting your hands on a Walther, you got to do it through the private party, which you're paying California prices on, not free America.
Yep.
Or you got to have a connection like an interfamilial transfer. Langdon offers the slide and only the slide. They also offer a California compliant version of the gun. If they go back, it goes back a little bit further. So it's an older model frame, but he can still dot that. So if you are in California and you don't have a connection to, or don't want to pay the prices, I don't know if there's really a better option if you're looking for a metal gun, DASA action. It's pretty awesome. So we now have in our Raven Wing alumni, I think we have 13 dudes that are now running a Langdon. We could almost fill a whole squad at a USPSA match just running Langdon. And it's kind of cool to see and feel the influences people have watched my journey.
Yeah.
To tag onto the there equipment. So, yeah.
So let's talk about the impact of Raven Wing, right? So you got your, you got Mo, right? You got Ethan, yourself, Stephanie, for a little bit there, Alex, or for longer than a little bit, but Alex and stuff like that. All of them, except for maybe Mo and Ethan was doing other stuff, but you know, everyone's competed, or at least has, they've taken classes from JJ and Tim and from high level competitors and stuff. What did the relationship with those people, going to classes with, going to matches with, trying to get higher standards, how did that impact your progress? Did it take away because you couldn't focus on, because everyone always wants to beat each other, or did it help you, or did it push you to competition, away from competition? And then finally, why did you exceed the rest of those scrubs?
Just kidding. I think the short answer is it pushed me to get better constantly. So I think having a cadre or a group of people that want to get better constantly and want to go compete, I'm a competitive dude. I hate to lose. There's that old adage, right? Hating to lose can be detrimental versus a passion to win. I don't know, man. I think it depends on how you use it, right? It's just the truth.
Let the hate roll through you, buddy.
Man, I absolutely hate to lose. And I hate to lose when, especially when I left something on the table, right? It's some things are going to happen and that are outside of your control. I played enough sports to know that. But if I ever feel like I didn't put in enough dry fire, I didn't do enough practice, I wasn't mentally prepared for what we were walking into, those leave me on fire. And so having a group of folks that like to shoot. So Alex was, who was originally with us in the company, and Steph competes a lot. At one time, Steph was significantly better than I was. And I love her to death, and I've told her this to her face, so I have no problem saying it. When you see a, what is she like? 5'5", 5'4", a 5'4" Asian woman.
5'3", 5'4". Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When you see her out there running that gun and she's running it better than you do, and you're me, I was like, how the hell is this possible? And what am I doing wrong? And how do I get better? So I think those absolutely chased me. Alex, you know, before he left the company, Alex was, he made M in, carry optics, and now he's a GM in revolver. He went all weird on us, decided to go to the dark side. But Alex was great because I'd ask him, what are you doing to get better? And he'd share. And then it became a competition of who could get there faster, right? Who could master that skill or that particular principle, you know, or technique faster. And so that really drove me. And where I think it changed was, so Mo and Ethan shoot a little bit. I got Mo out to shoot some IDPA, which has been fun. We both like IDPA because you can run it AIWB. You can run USPSA too, but I don't think there's as much of a time penalty in IDPA when you're running AIWB as there is in USPSA. USPSA is so fast, and there's, you know, you can reload sort of wherever and move. Because there's rules around reload and drop mags and all that other stuff in IDPA, everybody sort of is handcuffed by those. And so if you develop your base gun handling skill set to be as good out of AIWB as everybody else is OWB, you don't lose anything, right? Which is,
And I would agree with that, right? Like, for example, if you're running AIWB in a concealed, you know, thing, that matter, it's up, down, go, right? Where those guys in the fishing vest, it's still in, flip, and go. You're still going from concealment. So the detriment is a lot smaller, especially if you plan it out well, and especially if, you know, you're not like a 400-pound white bearded fishing vest wearing. Love you, IDPA. You're getting better. You guys are getting better, man. So
they are. It becomes more attractive when you watch some of the drama in USPSA happening this week, man, all over the internet. But yeah, so I think that's where getting Mo and Ethan out a few times helped. But for me, it was just, I started stacking myself against other people. You know, as you pass, you set goals or milestones, and as you pass those, you start stacking yourself up against other people, right? We've got, despite being behind enemy lines, there's a lot of pretty good shooters here in California. And the community here is pretty interesting because it's so sort of, man, I don't know what the right word choice is, taboo or frowned upon or not mainstream to own guns and be
about. Well, it's committed. It's committed. You can't be laissez-faire. I mean, you can be. California still buys more guns than any other state in the union because of its size and stuff like that. But you can't be laissez-faire about your commitment in California like you can in other places.
100%. And so you get connected with that community. You start meeting some of the better shooters. And pretty soon I was looking at dudes like, I know, you know, when I was a B class and you'd beat a master class guy in a match and I'd be like, all right, I can get there. How do I get there and beat that guy? Right. So for me, it was just constantly setting milestones to try to get better. And then just a desire. And then, you know, in a past life, I played college sports. I coached college and high school ball after I graduated before I started my day job. And I loved helping people get better. There's something really magical about helping people get better, achieve dreams, understand, like those light bulb moments. That's my go juice, right? Mm-hmm. And so as I was getting better, people started asking me, what are you doing? And as you learned how to explain and have those conversations and you get exposed to instructors like you and Tim, who are just phenomenal, I was like, maybe this is something I could help with, which is when I joined Raven Wing and have started to really focus in on how do I become a better instructor as well. That community is like you said, committed, awesome to be a part of, but helping those folks also, I think, pushed me a lot too. It was when I had reached a point where I was outperforming maybe Ethan and Mo and a lot of the folks around me, it was, all right, now how do I help them get better? How do I start to translate this? How do I explain what I'm doing in a way that is tangible for them? And then if it benefits them, how does it benefit others? And so now I do most of our pistol instruction at Raven Wing. Obviously, Ethan and Mo are more than capable. They're endorsed by you. They're fantastic instructors. But I do most of our classes. And it's been, I've found a lot of joy in that. And I would say that that has been an additive hunger to continuing to get better, because there's this, you know, you can't fake the funk. And so when you get out there in front of a class of folks and it's time to put on a demo, or it's time to explain a concept or a technique or a principle, I want to be able to do it in a way that it's credible. Like, that's really important to me. Credibility is really important to me, as well as be able to do it in a way that they understand it. And if my dumbass can understand it and I can explain it to you all, you can understand it too, which I think is kind of cool. I've had a few students tell me, because I'm not a small dude, right? So I don't look like I'm going to be a super graceful competitor. I've had a lot of dudes say to me, if you can do it, I can do it. I'm like, hell yeah, let's go.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely. So
yeah, there you go. I also think,
and you and I've talked about this, I'm still new in this, right? It's only 5 years. And since I first picked up a gun, 3 years that I've been competing, I remember what it feels like to suck.
Yep.
I remember that feeling really, really well. And that,
yep.
Because I hate losing, that shit haunts me. And so I think that that keeps me hungry.
All right. So we talked about the motivation to start shooting guns, the fact that you got training, you found the right class of people that competed with you and pushed you, and the back and forth relationship with there. We talked a little bit about dry fire, and you making this meteoric rise in less than 3 years to the highest classification there is in shooting sports, you know, for all intents and purposes. What's next? What is your next immediate goal, my man, since you've had such a meteoric rise and stuff? What's your next immediate goal?
My next immediate goal, I have three, but I'll tell you, in the competition circuit, I want to win a level two.
Okay. We'll talk about all three. But let's talk about that one. Okay. So you want to win a level two, right?
Yep.
How are you going to do it?
So I'm an organized dude. I told you I took copious notes. I got a three-step plan. So first is I'm really working on my physical, in shapeness and characteristics, right?
You're looking good, brother.
I appreciate that. We're down quite a bit. I think, I was 308 on the scale this morning, right? Like, I'm not afraid to say it, boys and girls. At one point in my life, I was well north of 400, got down below 300, some health stuff. So I think it's, Scott, we're down like 40 some pounds now since I started in. So,
and for those of you don't know, how tall are you, bro?
I'm 6'6", man. I'm not a small.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh my God. They're like, this jelly roll running around. Yeah.
Fucking Jabba the Hutt looking motherfucker. Anyway.
Nah, man. Tall. I'm a tall dude. So first is the physical. The second is efficiency in movement. So my dry fire now is a combination of acceptable sight packages on different target difficulties while moving. That is what my dry fire is obsessed with right now, because I'm convinced that is my path to being able to beat these guys like JJ Rakaza, who are from point A to point B. I will never beat him in a foot race. It's not going to happen, right? And there's a whole bunch of other dudes out there that look like and move like JJ. So where I'm going to have to take advantage is what does my body offer, which is longer steps, the ability to cover more ground. And if I can control my center of gravity and keep the gun running and a place where I can get acceptable hits on target difficulties on the move or in and out of positions, that's where I think I can start to steal back time. So that's where my dry fire is going to really be focused. And then the third piece for me is not settling ever when I do get my live fire rounds for a comfortable practice. So we were doing this last Sunday. The Raven Wing boys and I were out on the range with Bailey doing some practice. And I was running a few of our drills, and it's all alphas and it's a spicy time. And I'm going, I'm not uncomfortable. And so then it was, I'm going to go and we're just going to see what happens. And then you drop a mic and you drop a couple deltas. And then the next run, you clean it up a little bit, but it's like 40% Charlies. And it's like, this is not good by any metric, but my God, I'm 2 seconds faster. Mm-hmm. So now how do I manage my sights to get the hits I need at that speed? And as soon as I hit that, we're going to go to the next level. So those are my three, is making sure that the few live fire rounds in practice I get, I'm uncomfortable at all times. And that in my dry fire is where I continue to support that level of comfort through that sort of focus on my sight packages and my efficiency in movement.
Okay. So that's good. All right. What resources, what information, what instructors are you seeking out or re-seeking or asking questions to hit those goals? Because you're nuts is not making the shit up yourself, are you?
Nope. What? No. So there's probably, you're always one of them, right? There's always conversations with you. I've been having a lot of conversations with Tim Herron. You know, I think Tim does a wonderful job of explaining principles and what he's after. One of the things, you know, Tim's Mighty Mouse, right? So we are the opposite body types, short right. and skinny, tall and large. But one of the things that Tim does really well for being his size is cover ground while the gun is running. And I've seen other little guys struggle with that almost because every step there's not as much mass. They bounce all over the place, right? And Tim does a great job with that. So that's been a lot of my conversation with him around the efficiency of movement and being able to run your gun while you're doing it. So Steve Anderson has some interesting dry fire concepts in some of his books that I really appreciate and his mental management piece too. So that, and then drills. So recently we had JJ out recently. I've been revisiting a lot of JJ's drills around the efficiency in and out. And so it's probably a combination of, you know, you, Scott's books, certainly Steve's JJ books. Steve's books, you, Steve, Tim, JJ. And, you know, like we'll give credit where credit's due. So, Ben Steger's got some pretty interesting drills out there too that I think are worth exploring to understand the principle behind them. And so some of those, he has one, it might be Quantics or Joel's drill that Ben sort of has helped make popular, the in and out drill. And so by adding difficulty in targets, you can make that drill everything from like just understanding basic movement left and right and how you get in and out of positions firing the gun to, like now I'm shooting head box onlys with only the credit card at 4 yards that I need to run splits at 25s on to be able to get over to, you know, a tuxedo out at 25 and I need to do it in X amount of time. And that's how I think how I get uncomfortable in chasing those. So it's not just me making it up. A lot of it is understanding the principles of those who've done it before or do it better than me. And how do I go grab those and make them my own and start to translate them into my own performance.
Okay, cool. What's your second goal? You said there were three. What's your second one?
The fast coin. So Ernest is teaching two classes this year. So he's with Langdon blowing up, and Ernest is doing some amazing stuff. I don't know if quick plug. Beretta has released some new guns. One of them is the 92XI, which is a frame-mounted single-action-only safety. Well, they just launched the 92XI Squalo. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Italian for shark. Squalo. Well, Langdon, Ernest has put his cut on that slide. So it's the lowest sitting red dot you can get on a Beretta with his proprietary firing block and internal system. His trigger bar on it comes with the magwell. I think it's going to be a great limited optics gun. So
what is it? It's a Beretta 92
XI Squalo. Yeah.
No, say Swallow. It's Swallow.
The Swallow. There you go. The opposite of shark. Exactly. I don't name them. I just shoot them, right? I just point at things and press triggers. So Ernest has been busy with all of these. They're having some awesome drops. So he's only teaching two classes, which means your opportunity, since he's now the holder of the fast coin after Todd Lewis Green. So I got into one of his classes this year. So in March, I'm headed down to Arizona to take his class and shoot for the fast coin. So in the more immediate future, I'm really focused on how do I go execute this. So, and I'll say really quickly, I am not sitting in dry fire just practicing this one drill, you know, the six shots over and over and over again. We have absolutely broken it down, and you had dropped some videos a while back breaking mm-hmm. down this drill, since you are what, fast coin holder number 13? Do I have that right?
15.
15. Okay. Mm-hmm. You had done some videos breaking this down. First person from appendix or from with the dot?
No, not appendix. First person with a dot.
Yeah, with the dot. So I am going to go try to do it, obviously, with my Beretta, with my Langdon gun. I don't think I'll be the first to do it. I think I forget his last name on IG, Sam Pitchfork. I think he was the first one to do it with the Beretta, wasn't he?
Nope. Number 14 was Trey from LASD.
Oh, okay.
Trey did it from a level 3 with sideward facing pocket mag clip. You know, the way you have to undo the clip to get to the magazine.
The old school basket weave where I got to pop it. That's fantastic. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah. Now that being said, when he did it, right? If you go level 3 and the side pop, you know, the enclosed pouches, right?
Yeah.
We have to pop the button to get it. You get 5.5 seconds. Okay. But I don't think he was the first one. He wasn't the first one to do it with the Beretta, but he was the first one. I don't know. Maybe he was. He was the first one to do it, that gangster.
Yeah, that's gangster. So that's goal number 2. So my dry fire of late has been focused on that. Really breaking it down to how quickly does my first shot need to break from appendix in the head? How quick does my reload need to be? And then what is the sight? What's the acceptable level of sights, and how do I get super uncomfortable to make that even faster for me is really what I'm chasing at the moment.
I have my ideas on that. How are you doing it?
Love to hear them.
The uncomfortable part.
So I'm in dry fire. I'm focused right now because the dot doesn't move much in dry fire, right? There's no recoil to mitigate. So I'm really trying to take about a full tenth of a second off in what I'm seeing in my splits to move it down and account for that when we get into live fire. So what my goal is right now is that if I can get, it's at what, 7 yards, 2 to the head, reload, 4 to the chest. If I can get my first shot off at 1-2 with a 2-5 split, not in dry fire, I'm trying to do it 1-5, right? Because you're just pressing. But if I can get my second shot off with a 2-5 split, a 1-5 reload, I know I can just rip 4 into the chest after that and should have ample time. But that puts you right about that 3-3, 2-5 second mark to break the first shot into the chest. And then if splits are just 20s after that, which is casual, then I think we're
yeah. So I'll give you mine and how I did it, right? So I broke it down, right? I practiced the components, and then once I had the components down, then I did the whole goddamn drill. I don't understand this, right? I'm gonna say this, okay, out on the internet, right? You do what you want to do, God bless you, right? But I got a fast coin, you don't. Not you specifically, the royal you, right? There seems to be this thing out there. And again, hey, if you want to disagree with me, if you have accomplished something and you've gone to this whole thing about not doing the drill to earn the standard of the drill, I particularly, I'm not saying if you do it the other way is wrong. I think it's horseshit, though. Okay. Not so much that if you want to do it this way, but you think there's some like egalitarian honorable because I'm not going to do the drill because it'll invalidate the actual drill. That's horseshit, man. You in the corporate world, right? You're a high level dude in your corporate world, stuff like that, right? People give you reports, right? If someone said, hey man, I'm going to give you components of the report, but I'm actually going to give you the report that you want, what would you say to that person?
Get out of here. Fuck yourself.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Get out of here. Right? Bring it back. Yep.
Right. I have this procedure, but I'm, you know, instead of doing it, I'm going to give you parts of the procedure and stuff like that. No, man. Do the procedure over and over and over again until you get it. Now, is the end all be all the actual drill? Maybe, maybe not. But I'll guarantee this, man. If you can do a 499 fast drill consistently 97% of the time, even though that's all you do is the drill, you're going to be a better shooter. You just are. You're going to be a better shooter. So what's so fucked up about doing the actual drill? I'm not criticizing your point, but that just seems to be a theme out there on the internet, right? How do you get better at stage planning, Jared?
You go shoot stages.
You also shoot fucking stages.
Yep.
I'm just going to shoot component. No one has never shot a match, shot components of a stage, has never done a stage before and fucking won the stage. No one's ever done that. So it's my podcast, my rant. So
you do you.
Here's what I did, right? Once I got the components of that, I broke everything down, right? Did that. I'm like, okay, there's no recoil in this. I have to put myself under pressure, because what do you give up if you break everything down? Okay, boom. All right. So let's say we break down what I did in the video, right? 1.5, right, for the draw, right? 0.5 for the second split, 2 second reload, quarter, quarter, quarter. That's easy, right? That's 4.75, right? Well within an acceptable buffer of skill to get it done, right? Into 4.99. What does that not do? If you just do the 1.15, right? If you just do the 5, or if you even break it down to percentage of that, what do you not practice when you're breaking them down, the components? You're not practicing the durability and the pressure of the entire drill. And that's where people fuck up. That's where people fuck up, right? So that's my own personal thing, right? So what I did is, once I did that, take the 4.99, multiply it by 0.75 or 0.8. We'll just say 0.8 for round, right? I think they came out to like 3.8. And you know what I did? In dry practice, I did a whole bunch of motherfucking fast drills dry. And then I confirmed it in live fire when it got live fire, right? Here's the thing, and you know, the people in pistol forum love me, they don't like me, whatever, fuck off. I can tell anybody how to earn a fast coin, right? Do you know who did more fast drills than anybody else has ever lived on the face of the earth? Todd Lewis Green.
Yeah.
Todd Lewis Green. Hard stop. I'll argue with anybody about that, right? Anybody about that, right? And you know why? Because he and Simon Golub, right, were best friends when they both lived up in Metro DC area, Maryland. That's what they did. So do the drill, guys. Stop being egalitarian on it. Like, I'm not going to do the thing to do the thing. Do the thing. Do the thing. But if you can't do the thing, break down the thing, then do the thing. Sorry. I'll probably get internet hate for that, but that's okay. Anyway.
You do you. You're not wrong. Do you know Brandon Powers?
I do know Brandon, yeah.
Yeah, Brandon had an interesting post up today. Same concept. So he and I have had some good conversations about this. He's also a Langdon shooter. I think Brandon's post today was, I don't do the drill to do the drill. I do the drill to improve my skill. Which is essentially the same thing, right? So.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And here's the whole thing, man. It's like, you're practicing to earn a coin. Yep. Why? Because there's only been 25 other people that have ever earned this coin. So I want to go get it. It's a personal goal of mine.
Yep.
It doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything to you. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. People have goals and all kinds of different stuff. For me, it's a goal. It's one of the ones.
So why is it one of your goals? I mean, you're a grandmaster, bro. I lost your camera.
I don't know what happened. Hold on. Can you hear me still?
I can hear you still, yeah.
All right, it'll come back. Give me a second. I don't know what happened. Something bumped or there we go. Why it's a goal for me? Well, one, I think that in competition, we hear from a lot of folks that everything's done from the race holster or outside the waistband, and that you're just naturally faster that way, and that's not how you would do that stuff in real life, right? And for this one, I think it's pretty amazing because it's all from concealment. It's really how you're going to run it the most. And so,
or there's a severe penalty for not doing it from concealment.
Yeah. So it's like a half second or something like that.
It's a half second.
It's that. Yep. And I value the AIWB skill quite a bit. So, it's something that I'm after, cause my third goal is your black belt patch. I've come close a few times. I've got the 3/4 patch, although with your black belt patch, it's twofold. I want to be the first person to do it with the Beretta, because nobody's done it. Nobody's done your patch with the Beretta. Now I got a weird camera view. We'll figure this one out. Hold on.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I know what's going on. It's not letting me switch cameras.
Everybody stand sideways.
Every time I move this thing, it's messing up. I don't know what's going on. We'll figure it out. I want to do it with the Beretta, but I also want to be able to do your black belt, both from my gamer rig and from AIWB. What I love about being proficient in both is the only difference is the draw, right? I mean, really, that's the only difference. So I think that for me, that's sort of the key in how to.
But that's a big difference. Mastery. It's a big difference, man.
I agree.
It's a big difference, dude. I mean, even these days, man, I just saw it in Nashville, right? A great subsec or a great draw for me in a demo with 0.85, right? Do 0.85, but I'm a badass, right? These days, dude, if I do a 0.78 for my ALS, it's like, okay, whatever. Well, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
So I am, and here's how you go, right? You stand comfortable. You were there when I was really starting to play with the scoop draw this year. You mm-hmm. gave me a little tip about indexing the pinky first. So mine was on the scoop out of the gamer. I was sort of, it's a stab, but I was stabbing forward to start my momentum and the gun moving forward towards the target. But my grip was 80% of the time it was consistent. We started talking about make the pinky hit the gun first. Same motion, but let's get the pinky on the gun first so that you can lock it in and you know, getting your hand around the gun, building consistency of the grip. So just since I saw you, when was that, October? Were we up there in October of this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So last time out on the range, if I'm not under a 0.7 out of that thing to the A zone, I'm really frustrated. It's just how much the dry fire is paying off and where we're getting. And so for me, that's the path to, I think, your patch.
Because everything else is casual.
Yep. It's absolutely.
You got a 0.7 draw, everything else is casual.
Yep.
So,
and so then if I'm working the AIWB for the fast coin, I'm also working the AIWB draw for yours too, right? So that's my goal, is to be able to earn both of those. So I'm setting some goals this year. I want to win a level 2. I want that fast coin and I want your patch, but I want your patch times 2 in both modalities. It's important to me because I teach in both. I want to help people get better in both, but I want to be proficient in both. And that's for me, right? All of this journey started for me because of a tragic loss in the family and that path. And I don't ever really want to stray too far away from, at the end of the day, man, I want to be able to make sure that my family and those around me know that I've got their backs and that they're going to be okay. And that we're going to be safe, but we're proficient with it too. And I think that's a pretty interesting blend we offer at Raven Wing. I think you offer it too. Not everybody does as good a job of talking about it as you do. Some are decent, but this idea of performance, you can get so far down that track, you forget that why a lot of these folks are taking our classes is because they face an uncertain world these days. And here in LA, we've got a DA that refuses to put anybody in jail for anything. And so you've got all kinds of folks on the streets just doing dumb shit. And I think people are looking for ways to become a little more secure in their own self, you know, their own self-protection. We'd love at Raven Wing to be able to offer them that, one, by bringing in great instructors like you, a whole bunch of others that we get in here to SoCal, but also come train with us. We want to help you get better. We want to help you be proficient and safe, but we want to do it in a way where you're having a good time and wanting to chase performance, but not because we want you to chase performance, because when it's time and that happens, we want you to have a surplus of skill. That's really the truth of it, right? So for me, that's why those are my goals this year is one, it's competition based. I love this sport. I want to get better at it. It's time to start winning. I got the G card. I'm proud of that. Now it's time to go start winning, right? Until you're winning and you're shooting your classification at major matches, it's, you know, I don't call people paper GMs, but it's, for me, it still feels a little hollow.
Outstanding. Outstanding. All right. So A, start shooting. B, get in good health. C, surround people, surround yourself with people that are competitive, that will drive you, that have the same goals. D, start competing. E, put some other goals out there, personal things, and have a plan how to get there. Fantastic, man. That's how you reach those levels, right? In such a short period of time. Outstanding, brother. All right. So where can people find you and Raven Wing, man?
For sure. So RavenWingLimited.com is our website. All of our classes are up there for the 2024. We're kicking the year off with Bob Vogel. We've got Scott again, of course, and some of the other names that we've named. You can sign up there. You can find us on the Instagram. It's at Raven Wing Limited. That's probably our most active social channel. And we're doing some drops on YouTube. We've got some drops coming up on YouTube too, so check us out on YouTube. And then you can find me personally on Instagram. It's Jared underscore RW. RW.
Outstanding. Yep. Outstanding. Well, love you to like a brother, man. It's been an absolute honor to be part of and watch your journey, man. Keep on killing it, dude. I can't wait to see what's next for you, man. And I can't wait to shoot a match with you one of these days. Damn.
Heck yes. I know. So, we need to work this. Next time you're here or I'm out your way, yeah, we need to figure out a weekend where we can find a spot to go shoot a match. I'd love to do it with you. Just go.
Outstanding. Fun. Yeah, man. Outstanding, brother. All right, guys. Hey, thanks for tuning in. Share, like, and subscribe, all that other shit, people. Like, guys, I don't really do this podcast for you. I do them for me and people I want to talk to and stuff like that. If you dig it, you dig it. If you don't, you don't. Anyway, cool. That being said, be good, stay safe, get more training, man. Have a good one, guys. See ya.